Welcome to Arby's, where we have the meats. What can I get for you tonight?
Hey there. My buddy here and I are on a mission to confirm whether or not you do in fact have the meats.
Sir, I can assure you, we have the meats.
Well, in that case, we'll take two meat mountains.
You want two meat mountains? Nobody's ever even ordered one, much less two. They're too big. Those sandwiches contain so much meat that after we serve them to you, we might not even have the meats anymore. You're mad, Matt. This is impossible.
Nothing's impossible for the fast food film friends.
Okay. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to devour these monstrous meat mountains in one sitting and live to tell the tale.
Oh, we will. We've got people counting on us. How much do we owe you?
That'll be $67.50. Could you please pull ahead to the door, though? These aren't going to fit through the window. This drive-thru speaker will self-destruct in 3, 2, 1.
We go and grab a quick bite.
We watch a movie, then fight.
We're the Fast Food Film Friends.
You're listening to Fast Food Film Friends, the show where we spend an evening watching a movie, take a few days off our lifespans by eating incredibly unhealthy food, and waste about an hour of your life talking about it.
That's absolutely right. That's why we're here. This week, we're going to be talking about Tom Cruise's latest masterpiece, Mission Impossible Fallout, and we will be eating the almost insurmountable Arby's Meat Mountains.
From IMDb, the plot summary of Mission Impossible Fallout reads as follows. Ethan Hunt and his IMF team, along with some familiar allies, race against time after a mission gone wrong.
Before I give you the Meat Mountain description, do you know what IMF stands for? Because I wondered that the entire time during this movie.
It stands for Impossible Mission Force.
Does it actually?
Yes.
Because I thought it was like Impossible Mother Efforts.
It comes from the old TV show.
Oh.
And it's kind of one of those like cheesy leftover things. It's like they're not going to change it. So like,
because I was thinking like international.
Right. That would make so much more sense.
Something. From Arby's.com, the Meat Mountain, which I'm sure not many of our listeners have heard of, is the biggest sandwich Arby's has ever sold. Stacked ridiculously high with almost all the meats, two chicken tenders, slices of roast turkey, pit smoked ham, corned beef, 13-hour smoked brisket, USDA choice Angus steak, roast beef, and topped with pepper bacon. There's also cheddar and Swiss cheese somewhere in there. It is a mountain of meat and cheese. It is the weight of the bag that held two of these was unbelievable.
It's hefty. This is a part of Arby's secret menu. I only knew about this because I used to have an inside connection with the upper Arby's corporate management. And I was told, hey, Meat Mountain, pass it on. I got this sandwich years ago in college. And I mean, I didn't go to class for days.
Yeah, I would imagine. I honestly didn't believe that it was a real thing. You sent me a link to some shady website that had an outline of this sandwich. And I thought, there's no way this is real. Because it's disgusting and it looks terrible. And once you proved to me that it was real with a few other random internet links, I thought there's no way our local Arby's is going to let us order this. And then tonight on the way over here, when I ordered them, the guy didn't even blink an eye. He didn't even question me. I had to go, can we get two meat mountains? And he just said anything else like it was an everyday order. So apparently people out here are doing this. Or at least they're prepared for people to do it. They've clearly had a training on the meat mountains. I still am kind of blown away, and I'm really repulsed that we're about to...
I, for one, can't wait.
I just don't think we're going to be able to get a bite. Like, do you get a bite of everything at once?
We're going to try.
Man,
but
it truly seems like it might be impossible.
But before we dig into those meat mountains, it's time for some Nimble News.
Nimble News.
Nimble News is the part of the show where we review all things new as quickly as we can do. New music, shows, purchases, experiences, or even new food or movies that we don't have time for in our main discussion. Kevin, it's been a few weeks.
Since we've
sat down, ate some food, and talked about a movie.
Yeah.
I hope that you news up these Nimbles.
Let me tell you, I've been busy, Nathan. I've been busy.
You were on jury duty, right?
For weeks, yeah. The Springfield Strangler. Was actually
okay.
What I was covering, but I can't talk much about it. It's still.
We'll save that for episode 12.
Yes. I appreciate your discretion.
Are you ready for Nimble News?
I'm 100% ready for Nimble News. Let's do it.
And go.
I watched the first episode of Hulu's The Handmaid's Tale last week. Overall, I liked the pilot episode, but thought the acting could have been a bit better and the pace a bit quicker. However, the dark plot, interesting mix of characters, and slightly unusual structure should get me to watch at least one or two more episodes. At least.
I saw Boots Riley's new film, Sorry to Bother You, starring Lakeith Stanfield, and although I thought the story's conclusion was kind of a messy letdown, the film is definitely worth checking out for its absurd humor, strong performances, insane visuals, and creative takes on important social issues.
I played the board game Seismic for the first time with some friends last week and while we were up at a cabin. The game was a nice change of pace from our usual Settlers or Labyrinth games and was pretty easy to explain and get people up to speed on. It was a fun, quick game, and although it uses hexagon-shaped tiles and wood blocks in its play, it is pretty unique in its strategy. Overall, 7 out of 10.
I went to Pizza Ranch for their dinner buffet, and I was thoroughly impressed with their wide selection, including a handful of varieties of dessert pizza that I thought were scrumptious. But, most importantly, a few of the regular pizzas on the buffet had stuffed crust, which was a very pleasant surprise. Your move, Pizza Hut.
I watched The Lost World Jurassic Park for the first time in my life a couple weeks ago. It might honestly be one of the worst movies I've ever seen, easily 10 to 20 times worse than either Jurassic World, which I thought to be the low point of the series.
I saw The Big Lebowski for the first time at a special 20th anniversary screening this past weekend, and I'd have to say my favorite part was when a guy in our theater jumped over the seat in front of him and put a stranger in a chokehold for being too obnoxious throughout the film.
You gotta do what you gotta do. He's probably a nihilist. I finally got around to reading Anthony Bourdain's Kitchen Confidential over the last few weeks. It's been on my list for quite some time. The book was incredibly informative about not only the inner workings of the restaurant industry, but also how to improve your own cooking at home and just really life in general. It was a funny and fascinating quick read. If books received Michelin stars like restaurants, I'd give this one 3 stars, which is the most.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I learned something new by you learning something new.
That's what it's all about.
I listened to a new podcast called Everything is Alive, where an interviewer talks to a different inanimate object in each episode. And I really love the show so far. It's charming and hilarious, and like all good art, it's changed the way that I see the world.
I moved from my old 2-bedroom place to a new 2-bedroom place last week. It was my first time hiring movers, as I'm now swimming in the podcast money. Although the movers were great to have in terms of physically loading things onto and off of a truck, it was still a hellish nightmare that cost me a hell of a lot more than it would have to bribe my friends to take a vacation day from work and help me move. 0 out of 10, would not recommend moving.
I checked out Bo Burnham's new film, 8th Grade, and it's just absolutely wonderful. It's hilarious and painfully awkward and heartbreaking all at the same time. It's timely, yet also timeless. It's incredibly thought-provoking. It's the most beautiful coming-of-age story I think I've ever seen. I think that anyone who was once a 13-year-old will love it too.
I started watching the Netflix original series Ozarks this week and am 100% hooked. The acting is so solid, not only Bateman, but his whole family, and especially Julia Garner as Ruth and Jason Butler Henry as Roy. The plot is gripping and the cinematography is stunning to say the least. The show needs way more recognition than it has been getting, and I'm only halfway through season 1. Give it all of the Emmys.
Well, that's all the time we have for Nimble News. Now let's dig in to Mission Impossible Fallout and Arby's Meat Mountains.
Oh my god. Two impossible things.
All right, so we have just unveiled the Meat Mountains. I don't even want to say like unwrap. This is just a monumental piece of... I mean, this is the eighth wonder.
You know, I have to say structurally, I like that they put the chicken tenders on the bottom because they do make for apparently a good foundation. The bottom bun is so smashed down by the weight of the meat, it's like a centimeter thick, when normally their buns are pretty good size. You know, cheese-wise, it seems like a good ratio.
I mean, this is, considering what a complete smorgasbord of meat is going on here, the presentation is not bad.
Not bad at all.
Like,
really.
This is not far from what I would say would be like an ideal...
Yeah. It's like a, you know how you can order like a regular Arby's roast beef, a double, or like a triple. You could probably order a septuple. I'm not really sure. I would imagine this is like a quintuple Arby's roast beef. Like it's significantly, there's 3 inches of meat, would you say, on this at least?
Oh, easily. I would say between 3 and 4.
Yeah. The tendies really, really stack up. The bacon, I like that it's on top. I'm going to taste that.
Yep.
So it looks like, from what I can see, let me hold it in the light here. Bacon, roast beef, corned beef, followed by pastrami.
And then some, is that ham?
I don't know, some mystery meat there. Ham, yeah, sure.
And then you've got some, it looks like cheddar and mozzarella cheese, just kind
Swiss,
of...
Swiss cheese.
Just really caking this.
Yeah, the cheese looks oddly tasty. You know, for what I thought this was going to look like, it's a lot better. And I'm very glad, apparently at some point, I did research, they included the fish fillet on this. And I am so happy that that is not a part of this. Because not only do I never want to eat fish from Arby's, but I don't need that in here. That's that would just override everything.
That's their Lent mountain.
Yes, their Lent mountain.
It includes none of the other meats.
No, it just includes fish and the Ten Commandments from the top of Mount Sinai. And that's the only mountain that's involved in that.
So to our listeners, be sure to check out our Instagram at Fast Food Film Friends to see a beautiful picture of this thing.
Or our Twitter at FFF Podcast, because that was finally set up. We finally got the consultants to, you know, crank that setup out.
Just check out our live journal.
Yeah, we've had a great MySpace. Our Zanga's off the charts.
We're actually having trouble. We're getting suspended from Flickr.
Yes. Flickr's tough.
We'll let you know about that.
Photo Bucket's going strong, though, still.
All right. I can't wait to take just the biggest bite that I've ever taken in my life out of this thing.
My mouth does open this far, but it's... Are you going to... I mean, which side do you even... I want to get everything.
Yeah, I'm trying to get the most...
Everything.
All right. Fully encapsulating bite.
You got a good bite lined up?
Yep.
I do too. You ready for this?
Yep.
Let's go.
Oh,
my. That's a juicy thing. Wow. Man.
I'm very serious when I say this. My jaw just cramped up. When I bit that.
I have not had to open my mouth that wide in a long time.
That was very painful.
But let me say, with that said, I'm going in for another bite.
That's absolutely tasty.
That's friggin' tasty.
It's good.
Oh, man. Why do they put anything on sandwiches other than meat? Honestly, it's a surprisingly good mix of things. It's everything they have. And now that I've kind of gotten into the sandwich, you can kind of get a cross-section of it. Roast beef, corned beef, pastrami, some mystery meat, cheese. Looks like roasted chicken, then ham, and then the chicken tenders on the bottom.
I'm going to take my third bite while I massage my...
Your throat?
My upper throat.
Yeah, let me know if you need help. I am getting some juice drippage, but that's to be expected with this much meat. Obviously, they've been cranking all these meats out for a long time.
I don't think I've ever had their chicken tenders.
I want to now.
Yeah, these are good chicken tenders. I mean, this is a very novelty item. And I'm sure they realize that, like, people who get this, you're not just, like, hungry one day, so you get a meat mountain.
Quick mountain over lunch.
You're guys like us that just think, like, what an insane thing.
Yeah.
Regardless of how bad or good this is, I'm never going to get it again, probably.
I actually might.
And so I'm actually surprised by the quality of this. Like, this is a... Well, very generous serving of all these meats. And they're, I mean, it's, I myself, I'm an Arby's fan. I like Arby's.
Sure.
And this is, you know, up to snuff with the rest of their offerings.
I gotta say, it truly is. It's impressive how well all the meats work together that well.
Yeah, I'm like a third the way through mine and it's not really, you know, falling apart yet.
No, it's solid. It's just a brick of meat. I think they layer the cheese nicely.
The cheese is sort of an adhesive.
It is, and they put it in the right spots. I think they know that their paper-thin roast beef's not going to stick to anything, so they put a layer of cheese between that and everything else.
They need to pay their cheese artists more.
They do. They absolutely do. Nobody else. Everyone else less. Cheese artists more. But again, this is, you know, for something that's been around, like all these meats have been around for so long, and they've been getting cranked out for so long, it works well. Which is kind of like Mission Impossible Fallout. Been around for a hell of a long time. Same stuff we're getting year after year, but when you put it all together again for another round, not that bad.
I'm going to take a few more bites before addressing this film.
I mean, I want to eat the whole thing. This should be number one on their menu, Meat Mountain.
I mean, it's kind of bizarre that this is not an advertised item. I mean, it's been on the secret menu for years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you remember about how much you paid for it?
Yeah, I sure do, because it was a lot. Let me get through this meat mountain bite here. One bite fills up your whole mouth. Like, every crevice of your mouth is filled after one bite. It is so tall that you take one bite and it's just like backfilling your entire throat, almost halfway down your neck. I paid $10 for each of these, which, if you think about it, one of their roast beefs, if you get a double, or one of their like market, whatever they're called, their little like normal sandwiches with lettuce on it, they're like $4 or $5 a piece. So this is really...
Yeah, I honestly think that's a pretty good deal,
I agree,
considering what else is on their menu.
I 100% agree.
I mean, it's definitely one of the most expensive fast food restaurants, that and, like, Hardee's.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, $10, like, I'm going to be as full as if I ate, like, 3 regular sandwiches, so.
Yes, absolutely. So we have an unofficial, I just pulled up, an unofficial count. Oh, my God. It's 1,300 calories in this bad boy, which is basically a day for you because you weigh about 70 pounds. Sodium is 3,500 grams of sodium. I mean, percentage daily? I don't know. Let me. I need more research.
So that's about a day for you because you're a fat ass.
That's exactly right. It is. It's almost triple what your daily sodium intake should be in this one sandwich, and basically a full day's calories. But you know what? Take another bite.
So on average, I could eat a little more than 2 of these per week and be good.
That's all you need.
When I started this sandwich, I physically couldn't handle it. And now my body is already very acclimated to the...
Mine's actually craving it. I'm trying to stop my hands from grabbing it, and I cannot. It's so oddly good.
This is delicious.
I just don't get how it works. But you know what? This is like something back in the day when I was a wild and young youth drinking alcohol. And this is something I would have made at like 4 in the morning, home from the bar. I'd crank something like this out myself, and then people would laugh at me and say, "You're ridiculous," and I'd say, "This is the future."
I was just going to say, I mean, I would probably, you know, come home from like a wild morning of church.
Oh, yeah.
Make one of these on the grill.
On the grill, you'd grill it. You'd grill. Nathan's out back grilling his lunch meats again. Trying to crank out a Mount Sinai sandwich.
We're spending much longer than normal.
Yeah.
Talking about this, but it's because we have to spend much longer than normal eating it because it's unprecedented.
It is so big.
I feel like I've been eating for like 2 hours and I'm like just over halfway done.
Let me explain something to you. I once in high school ate a Wendy's double bacon cheeseburger in one bite. If I go to McDonald's and I get a double cheeseburger, it's 3 bites tops for me. I am halfway through this and we've been eating it for about 15 minutes. I take huge bites. Huge bites. And I'm maybe a third of the way done with this after several bites, like double digit bites, which is unheard of for me for a sandwich. It just speaks to the volume of this beast. But yeah, we should, let me get one more bite before I jump into anything else. Because God, it's just, the taste is so, are you going to finish yours? I think we're both going to end.
Oh yeah, we're definitely going
to. Man, it's just so good. You know what? I'm going to try some Arby's sauce on it. What do you think? Are you keeping yours pure?
No, I'll try some. If you can spare me a squirt, can you just like put some like right there?
You want it on your sandwich?
Like a yeah.
You tell me when.
That's good.
You like it? You like it lightly sauced.
I just want like one bite.
Arby's sauce is like the crack of condiments. You're gonna want more than one bite. I do not know how your body can handle this sandwich right now. You're gonna be plugged up for days. Your import export ratio is gonna be all thrown off.
I can feel. In detail, the many meats traveling down my body.
Have you ever seen like a anaconda after it eats a person? That's what you look like right now.
Yeah.
I can see the outline of the meat mountain in your stomach.
You can see.
We record shirtless and I can see this.
Just inches above my navel is a solid chicken tender.
That's absolutely right. It looks like a little DQ chicken tender box right on your stomach there. The bacon really brings it home for me.
I have to hurry because this has taken so long that like the fullness is setting in.
Yeah.
I'm almost done.
They say it takes about 15 to 20 minutes for you to feel full after you eat. We're probably on minute 20. But man, it's just so good. So really, if you get one of these and cut it in half, half for lunch, half for dinner, your sodium's going to be off the charts. But calorie-wise, you'll be fine. That's a pretty normal day. Maybe.
I should try it this weekend.
That's it. I'm done. I can tell it's way too much because my body hurts, but I didn't want to put it down. That was so good. God, what a terrible world we live in where that's just available. How's that $10? That could feed a family. That one thing could feed a family for a day. I feel terrible now. I hate everything. I don't want to do this podcast anymore. I know I'm going to wake up in the middle of the night tonight sweating and like screaming for help because I won't be able to move. But I think it was worth it, in all honesty. I don't want to get to the verdict on the meat mountain. I don't think we've really praised it that much
yet. We need to give it a few minutes to contemplate it while the...
We will fully regret it by the end of this episode. I guarantee you. Our verdict right now will be a lot different than how we feel. And
This was a task that I thought couldn't be done. I thought, without a doubt, there's no way I'm finishing this sandwich.
You know, we should have pulled like a Mission Impossible and had it like almost close to falling off the edge of the kitchen table and like had a fight right above it.
I'm personally going to be close to falling off my chair in no time.
Your chair's going to be close to breaking after that. My God.
The first thing that I thought, you know, when we decided to do this episode about meat mountains, I was thinking, if we do this, where do we go from here?
Oh, that's a very good question.
And I've thought the same thing as I've watched all the Mission Impossible movies, which I did over the past couple weeks.
I cannot believe that you committed that much time.
So, when I was younger, I had seen the first movie. Yep. I understood very little of it, but I liked it. I thought it was cool. I had never seen any of the rest of the films.
I still have not.
And in the weeks leading up to this movie, I decided I was going to catch up on the entire franchise. I was going to watch all five of the movies that come before this. And for the most part, these movies just get better and better. And
I don't know if is it a serious statement?
They do.
Wow. If
the first movie is good, but it's dated. The second movie is not good. But the third
defeats your whole thesis.
And fourth and fifth, I honestly really, really enjoy those movies.
I think it may have just been because you watched them so quickly that you wanted more. You wanted more. You got addicted to Ethan Hunt. You wanted more Ethan Hunt. And I think it might be watching them this quickly back to back and only watching Mission Impossible for like 2 weeks probably skewed your point of view a little bit.
Well, I mean, I would argue that watching so much of one thing in a short amount of time would make me sick of it.
No.
And
have you ever tried crack? I will say, knowing you did that during this movie, I was very upset that I did not, because it seems like it's a lot of characters from the past movies. There's a lot of relationships that I was like, I have no idea who this person is. So I was kind of, a little let down with myself that I didn't get all caught up.
But yeah. So pretty much all the movies before this one have existed very independently. Like, there's been recurring characters and there's been a bit of like recurring storyline, but this is the first film that really just picks up where the last one left off.
Yeah.
And I think that anybody who hasn't seen the fifth installment is really missing out going into this one. I think that, at the very least, I would recommend to our listeners who have not seen the previous films, I'd say, go look up like a recap video or something like that.
You
like,
just told like me that, Nathan. You know, we do a podcast about these movies. You could have mentioned that to me, maybe. I was very confused today.
I was very interested in hearing your perspective as somebody who has not seen
them. I had no idea. Well, it wakes up, he's dreaming Tom Cruise, that little. Hey, let me say, I don't like Tom Cruise. I don't think he's a good person, a good father, or a good actor. But the man can do some stunts.
Is any of that relevant to Mission Impossible?
It's not at all. The only one that is a good thing, is he's good at stunts. He's great at stunts.
He is a living legend.
Oh, my God. In what? Film? Or
in stunts.
No. He's the only reason he gets like news headlines is because he's an actor who does stunts. Stuntmen do way crazier stunts than him all the time.
It's so much more than just performing the stunts. He spends the years between these films, he dedicates his life
to Scientology,
to learning new skills and doing things so that the next movie he can do something bigger and better.
The man is insane.
He is insane. He is completely bonkers. He does not function like a human does. But there is no one working in film like this man. And I am positive that he
hundreds
is going
of stuntmen working in film who are like this man.
I'm not. He's so much more than just a stuntman. He is a producer and actor and does all of his stunts. He doesn't have to. Like, nobody is asking him to do this. He is just insane.
He
wants to go down as this amazing action star. And I think that in 20, 30 years when this franchise is looked back on, I think that it's going to be remembered as the last of its kind. Because there's so many action blockbusters that are filled with CGI.
But there's so many that aren't, too. Jason Statham, Matt Damon do all their own stunts. There's tons of other people who do own stunts.
He's
been making the same movie that is only stunts for 10 fucking years.
First of all, you've literally not seen any of the past movies, so that's a complete bullshit thing to claim that he's made the same movie, because you don't even know. Every movie
literally
he does
called the same thing. It's an impossible mission where, let me guess, he has to stop something bad from happening to the world on a mission.
Yeah, the story is barely relevant.
That's exactly my point. It's the same movie.
But the stunts are... Every movie, he breaks...
Instead of a crane, it's a skyscraper. And then instead of a skyscraper, it's a different crane. And then instead of that, it's on a boat.
You are
And now he's jumping out of a plane.
You are so unqualified to make those kind of comments about a franchise that you haven't seen.
I've seen the second one.
That one's terrible. That's the worst example.
Well, either way, I'm not impressed. I'm not impressed by this little...
The fourth movie has an action set piece that is already one of the best of all time. And yet in each film, he tops it. He does things that are... The stories of these movies are completely built around the stunts.
I did not think the stunts in this movie were that impressive. Regardless, you can worship Tom Cruise and his stuff.
You and I are on such completely different pages about this because if you're looking at this purely for the product and not for the process and not like appreciating that.
I appreciate the process, fine. I'm telling you that I'm not impressed that much by the process because stuntmen do this process for movies year after year and get no recognition. He only gets recognition because he does the same thing that they do, but he's also acting. He does dialogue in other scenes instead of just stunts. I'm telling you that stuntmen could outdo him at any step. It's just they are not acting in the movies.
But you right there are explaining what is amazing is that there's people who dedicate their entire life to these stunts, and that's just like a small portion of what he's spending his time on.
It's a pretty big portion.
He's producing these movies. Like,
do you know what producer means? A producer title could literally mean nothing. It could mean that he's on set saying, "I want to do the stunt this way."
He's collaborating with Christopher McQuarrie, the director, and they are writing these stories, and he's imagining the stunts.
He had nothing to do with writing. I can guarantee that.
There is a podcast called Q&A. Where directors and writers talk about the work they do on films.
Great.
And there was a recent episode of this podcast with Christopher McQuarrie, who directed this film. Mm-hmm. It was a 2-hour episode. And he talked all about the insane stuff that goes into these movies.
Yeah.
And Tom Cruise comes to him and just says one day, "I want to do this."
And then
he spends months or years of his life preparing for that.
Yes. He's not writing the movie. He's saying, "I want to hang from a helicopter." He's saying, "I want to have a bathroom fight." He's not like, "Here's how I think the plot should go. I think the dialogue should be like this." He's saying, "I want to jump out of a fucking plane because all I can do is stunts."
In this interview, the director explains how these movies do not start with scripts. They start with
stunts because they're bad movies. That's my whole point, is that all it is is stunts. It's not... And it's... If you gave a camera crew... to 10 stuntmen and said, here's $20 million, do whatever the hell you want, I guarantee they would come up with crazier shit than Tom Cruise does in this movie. They'd be hanging from helicopters, jumping off of those into other helicopters while skydiving without a fucking parachute. Like, he doesn't do anything that's that crazy. It's just he gets credit because he's an actor. He's a mainstream actor. But he's not a fucking actor. He's terrible at acting. He's just good at stunts. And then he says 5 lines in the movie. He's not that special, other than the Scientology and terrible relationship with Katie Holmes. He's a stuntman who oddly gets paid to speak lines.
I don't think we're really going to get anywhere with this conversation because my appreciation for this film lies entirely in understanding the work that goes into it. And like,
I get, and so I've been
if,
watching.
And okay. So if that's not something that impresses you...
I appreciate it.
I understand.
I think you're misinterpreting appreciation and impressing me. I appreciate the work that goes into it. I've been watching. I've seen. Here's another thing. On Reddit and all over the internet, I've seen for the last four months, "Oh, here's Tom Cruise hanging from a helicopter. Here's Tom Cruise riding a motorcycle around Paris." I've seen how they do all the stunts. It's not impressive. He's hanging from a helicopter. He has a fucking safety line on him. It's not that impressive. He's driving a motorcycle. The streets are closed off. He knows exactly what to do. It's not that impressive. He's jumping out of a plane. It's not that hard to skydive. I've jumped out of a plane before, Nathan. Are you impressed? He's got all the safety gear in the world. He's got millions of dollars around him to make sure nothing happens to him. I'd rather watch Jackass. I find that honestly more impressive than what he does. He is just so... It's so easy for him. Because he has all the time in the world to prepare for it. He's got safety crews doing everything they can to prevent anything from going wrong. Like a broken ankle is like, "Oh my God, he broke his ankle.
he was out of filming for like 2 months because he broke his ankle. It's out of control. It's
and
like
he was supposed to never
break their ankle walking down their fucking driveway.
His doctors thought he would never run again. Oh, and weeks later,
I'm sure they didn't say
later,
that just for the press. Jesus, yeah, broken ankle. He'll never, he's done. He'll never walk again. That's such horseshit. Oh, it's Tom Cruise throwing that Scientology money at everyone he owns. Make it seem real bad. Make it seem extra cool. Don't mention my daughter or my ex-wife because I'm a monster.
So I thought the score was pretty good.
I thought the cinematography was actually pretty nice.
Yeah, it was a beautiful movie.
Yeah, beautiful movie. I will say, now that we've moved past our main point of contention that we just discovered, not that bad of a movie. Not that bad of a movie. One thing I kind of took issue with was, A, how does Ving Rhames, how is Ving Rhames allowed to wear the same hat and shirt in every movie that he's in for the last like 15 years?
Ving Rhames is kind of like the biggest anomaly of these movies yeah. because there's nothing about him that like you would want to keep seeing time after time. And he's in, I think he's in every single movie. I think there's
really
one of the films, I believe he's only in it for maybe like one scene, or maybe he's not in that one. But he's at least in 5 of the 6.
God. It's that and voice, that sultry voice.
I mean, he's lovable in the corniest way.
He is lovable in the weirdest way, because anybody else who wears a straw hat like that and a bowling shirt 100% of the time, that's like a Charlie Sheen on vacation. Like, it's not a good look for anybody. People don't respect
that. And he's
that
like
look.
On like a mission.
Yeah.
Where
he's just casual in Paris, like the fashion capital of the world.
There's actually, I think it's the second movie. There's like 3 jokes about the film
yeah.
where he, one of his expensive pieces of clothing gets like damaged or ruined.
Ooh.
And he's like, oh man, my Louis Vuitton sneakers.
God damn it. God damn it.
And it's just, it's just so good. It's so cool.
I like the guy.
Like, the one thing that I learned to do watching these movies is like
worship Tom Cruise.
I learned to accept the corniness
yes.
with open arms.
I
like
think,
it's this is not going to be one of my favorite yeah. films of the year. This is not like it doesn't hold a candle to like the screenwriting and like acting and dialogue
yeah.
of honestly most of the movies that I see. But like if I just like sit back and just eat some popcorn
yeah.
and enjoy the ride. I have a great time watching
this. I feel like during the screening, there were points where like things happened in this movie that were like supposed to be suspenseful, and like, you know, a detonator almost rolls off a mountain,
mm-hmm.
and people in the theater like laughed. So I feel like everyone was on the same page. Like,
yeah.
we know this is a ridiculous action romp, but we're here for it, and
yeah.
we know what to expect. I feel like had I seen all the other movies, I would probably have been more prepared for that. I probably did more scoffing than laughing.
Yeah.
Like for instance, when did Simon Pegg come into this franchise?
The third.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's been in it for a long time.
I had no idea he's been that deep in it. But I thought I love Simon Pegg.
He's probably my favorite character. In these movies.
No, I like him in real life. In these movies, I liked his character, but his dialogue was just so cheesy and like poorly written.
But I mean, it all is.
It all, but his was like extra, and the thing is, like, I like him so much. I was hoping he would be like a witty, clever thing.
He kind of plays more of that role in the previous films, and this one, he is kind of a little more subdued, and he's
yeah.
not so much like the.
He was. I feel like he just said things that needed to be said to like move the plot, or like,
yeah,
we're working on it, and let me wear a mask. Don't even get me started on that mask machine. That was the most. The gadgets in this movie were just. So ridiculous.
We've got some stuff to get to in our spoiler segment. But I will say that this, you know, even though the story and the dialogue is, I mean, it's hard to take serious.
Yeah.
The core message that this movie has about, you know, saving one life is as important as saving millions. As hard as it is to take this movie seriously, that message of, you know, saving the world or saving people in any capacity is important.
It's not that though, because he kills people left and right as long as they're on the wrong side.
If they're attacking him or something.
Yeah, but a police...
He goes out of his way to not take lives.
And then you see him like chuck 6 people out of a helicopter. Like, is very picky and choosy, because I agree. I think that's what they were going for. And like, he saves somebody who needs to be saved. He doesn't want to kill people. But at the same time, like, anybody who's on the wrong side, he's just like, kills them like they're flies. Which, you know what, you can't draw a line like that. Either life's sacred or it's not, in my opinion.
All that I'm trying to say is that message in this movie is that's the most that any of these films have had, like, they've, you know, put into words kind of what they're going for in terms of morality. Like, until this, like, that's not really been present. But I think that message is actually a pretty positive one. And it makes me see these movies in a slightly different light of saying, like, okay, it's not just badass and cool what he's doing. Like, yeah, like,
he's got a heart.
We should all try to save the world in whatever way we can.
Well, yeah, you shouldn't go around killing people is a pretty easy fucking message to spread around the world. Don't kill people. Check. One thing I don't like about Tom Cruise and in these movies that really bothers me, and I don't know why, just the way that he runs. I hate the way that he runs. He runs like he's a ninja chopping cinder blocks with every stride. But outside of that, stellar guy. Spoiler snack? You looking for a snack? Were you thinking just now that meat mountain wasn't enough? And that you would like some sort of delicious tart snack?
Before I get to the snack, we need to give our verdict on the meat mountain and this film. So the meat mountain, my hopes for this were high.
So were mine.
On one hand, I was kind of ready to be let down, but I just had this image in my mind the last few days of like this gargantuan just piece of work that I was going to lay into my face.
Wow.
And
you have a way with words.
I think it honestly exceeded my expectations wildly.
I had kind of low expectations. I didn't think it would be good. I was very concerned about the fish fillet, whether that would be involved or not. When I saw that wasn't, my expectations went up a bit because that concerned me. I will say, based on the pictures I had seen online, how it was portrayed, it did seem a little smaller to me, which was a bit of a letdown. But
taste, you wanted more.
It's a mountain. That was more like a meat hill to me. But taste-wise, absolutely blown away. Unbelievable. My arteries clogged right now. I'm probably going to have a heart attack during this podcast, but
time is slowing down in front of our eyes.
Well worth it. Well worth it for that sandwich. Highly recommend. If you have $10 to your name, go get a meat mountain. It'll sustain you for weeks, and my God, does it taste good. What a ride.
Don't pay your phone bill. Check out of the mail.
You pay $10 for your phone
bill. Tear it up. Instead, get yourself a mountain of meat.
Yeah.
So, Mission Impossible Fallout. You know, what's your takeaway from that?
I think go see it. I honestly think go see it. It was good. It was a ride. I was entertained the whole time. I hate Tom Cruise. The stunts were all right. But yeah, go see it. It's a weird movie. If you're going to see it, watch some other Mission Impossibles before, because I felt very out of the loop myself, but I still enjoyed it. So I think if you've seen all the other ones, definitely go see it.
Yeah, I'd recommend watching Mission Impossible Rogue Nation beforehand. But I would highly recommend seeing this film, especially in theaters. I think this is like a great example of a movie that your living room TV is not going to even come close to doing this justice. This is a movie best enjoyed, largest format possible. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I knew what I was getting. I wasn't going to get a great story. I'm not going to, you know, get some strong character drama. But the stunts blew me away. It was a gorgeously cinematic movie.
It was very nicely shot. I will give it that, yeah.
Two thumbs up for me for Mission Impossible Fallout.
I'm going to give it one thumb up and one thumb down for Tom Cruise's stunts and the lack of effort he put into it. So before we jump into spoiler snacks, we're going to need a word from our sponsors.
This episode of Fast Food Film Friends is brought to you by Snackbox, the new monthly subscription service that everyone's raving about. Our advertising affiliates have asked me to make very clear that Snackbox is not a box filled with snacks. It is a box that you can use to put snacks in. Again, no snacks, just a box. Receive 30% off your first order by going to snackbox.com/fastfoodfilmfriends and entering promo code SOMUCHROOMFORSNACKS. And we're back, and it's time for our spoiler snack segment, the part of the show where we eat some snacks to tie up the meal, and we talk full spoilers about the movie. We talk the ending, we talk the middle, we talk every bit of it.
That's right. And today, in honor of the Meat Mountain, we are eating a full-size sheet cake. I'm just kidding. We are eating Arby's turnovers.
We are eating an apple turnover and a cherry turnover.
Mm-hmm.
And from Arby's.com, the cherry turnover is described as follows. Once you've enjoyed a meat sandwich, your body's natural reaction is to thirst for dessert. If you're the type of person who craves fruity sweets, you'll love our cherry turnover. It's a freshly baked pastry stuffed with sweet cherry filling.
That was so obviously written before the Meat Mountain was a thing. Because after the Meat Mountain, you do not need that. The apple turnover, they describe it as, you know, everyone knows that an apple a day keeps the doctor away, but did you know that an apple turnover a day keeps you happy and satisfied and sufficiently pastried? Which I never want to be described as. So I don't want to eat these because I'm stuffed, and they don't really look that good.
So on that note, let's dig in.
Let's dig in. Are you going apple first?
Let's do apple.
I was going to do apple first. That is so sugary. It is overwhelmingly sugary. You can barely taste the apple. I think the frosting on top is too much, maybe.
I'm not really a fan of the texture.
No.
I like pastries. I like turnovers. Maybe from a nice local bakery.
Yeah, these are not
but
that.
But this is a...
This is a mass-produced, once-frozen... Like, the frosting you could literally peel off in one...
I was going to say, the icing I would describe as crusty.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... The crust is also crusty.
Yeah, it's not flaky. It's not nice. It's like I don't even know how to describe it. Overcooked one layer of dough.
Yep.
I mean, you really can't go wrong with the sugar-filled... You really can't go wrong with a sugar-filled piece of bread, but I think they almost did here.
You and I, on this show, have had our fair share of apple desserts.
Yeah, we really have.
We've had, I believe it was Burger King's apple pie.
Which is by far and away my favorite.
Taco Bell's caramel apple empanada.
Oh, actually, that's up there too.
Both of which are really fantastic and probably our two favorite spoiler snacks we've had on the show.
Yeah.
This is just bad.
The worst apple.
This is very disappointing.
It is. You should probably try the cherry then on that point. Maybe, you know, nice. It looks like it has the same frosting.
Yep, looks the exact same except red on the inside.
I think it's just the same with some red food dye in the center.
Yep.
Tastes like they left some maraschino cherries in some bread for like 2 months.
I wouldn't even give it that. It tastes like medicine on the inside.
Yeah, that's not good either.
That's much worse.
Yeah, I'd rather eat the apple. My pastry is a little flakier on this one. Why do we keep eating it when we say how bad it is? Why do we eat this shit? And after one bite, we say, this is a nightmare. And then we just keep doing it.
Everything that we do is for the fans.
You know, that's why when I'm walking down the street and a crowd just runs up to me and everyone wants to take my picture, I say, this is why I eat that stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, that's not... I'm going to give a verdict on this right now. Don't get turnovers at Arby's.
No.
Drive down the street. I'm sure there's a Burger King within 3 blocks and get their apple pie. Or if there's not, there's a Taco Bell across the street closer, I guarantee. Get the caramel apple empanadas. These are trash. These should be taken off the menu. Arby's should stick with Meat Mountains, potato cakes, and curly fries. That's it. And
heroes. You know, I looked at the dessert menu for Arby's to see what we should eat this week for our snack. They don't really have much in the dessert department at all.
I was curious about that, because when you said to get these, well, they do have cookies. I would have rather had a cookie or a shake. Oh, Jamocha shakes. That was kind of their thing back in the day.
Okay. You have chastised me so many times for choosing to get frozen drinks. I thought I was doing you a solid by not getting shakes.
Well, I would have rather tried the salted caramel and chocolate cookie and the triple chocolate cookie.
Oh, let's go back.
Let's head on back. Let's pick up another Meat Mountain and some dessert. Just round out the night. All right, so we've seen the movie. We've talked a lot about food. We've already run a little long. In terms of spoilers, guess what? The mission wasn't impossible. At the end of the movie, they literally say, like, how close were we? And he's like, the usual. And it's like a sitcom ending. I hated the ending of this movie so much. It's like everyone just kind of chuckles like, atomic bombs almost destroyed a huge part of the world. We were a second away.
Yeah, I mean, that's... To me, that's always the most disappointing part of these films is like when it ends and I realize like, oh yeah, this was all pointless.
Yeah.
And you know, there's like, there's nothing to take away from it other than like, I enjoyed the ride. And so, yeah, this ending is really just as dumb as the rest of them.
Yep.
I mean, the fifth film, the ending is a little darker and like not quite as just like, oh, everything's okay. But it's still, it's not like, I wouldn't say it's a good ending. It's just not quite as cheesy.
It seemed like this movie pulled a lot from old characters. Like it seemed it's a villain who he's clearly caught before.
Yeah, the villain was from the previous film.
Okay. So, and I loved him. I really liked that guy.
Yeah, he's really good.
He was a good actor. And he doesn't say much in this movie, but he's just got that kind of Eastern European bad guy vibe to him that I like.
His voice is like his perfect voice is for
killer. A killer.
Really good voice.
What I hated was those stupid voice patches that Simon Pegg would slap on and he could just sound like anyone. The gadgets were so outlandish. That, the mask making, the like, oh, here's a phone that just tracks this guy because fuck it. Here it is.
That's like a thing about these movies that annoys a lot of people to no end.
You are so bought into these movies. You have said like...
No. I'm not... I want to be clear. I'm not like, oh, hell yeah, I love the mask. What I'm saying is like, it's like a...
I know that, but I'm saying you have just accepted all of these ridiculous parts of these movies as like part of the franchise because you watched seven in like a day. You're like, I know what to expect. It's going to be ridiculous gadgets, bad acting, stunts.
If you'll let me talk, these masks
never
have been a part of these films. And I think they were also from the old TV show, if I
remember. Yeah, I actually think you
know that. So they've been in all these movies. And in the first two... They're used as these like really ridiculous plot devices where it's like every situation is solved by like somebody having a mask.
It's like a Scooby-Doo. And then
in the third one, it's much more grounded because before that, you didn't really know about the details of the technology and how the voice thing worked or like how the masks were made. It was just kind of like a magic, like, oh, I'm wearing a mask.
Yep.
In the third one, you like see kind of behind the scenes
how they make it.
Like it's like the whole process of them being created is like in detail shown and it's a really cool scene. And from that point, the masks have like not been used as so much of a crutch.
Yeah.
I think they've just been used more creatively because I think that they're pretty hit or miss usually. I think sometimes they're cool. Sometimes it's like, this is ridiculous. They need to stop using this. I thought
it was good in this movie.
The first scene, not the first scene, but like the opening scene where Simon Pegg is wearing the Wolf Blitzer mask.
Yes.
My jaw dropped because I could not believe how amazing that scene
was. So I thought, while I was watching that, I was like, this has to be a setup. But I assumed they had actually just recruited Wolf Blitzer, which they did for the real movie. But obviously, it was just something. But when they pulled the mask out, I was like, oh, it blew me away. Because I'm not that familiar with the masks, not having seen movies 3 through 5. But I was very happy to see Wolf Blitzer. I just thought that was so funny. And I was like, I would have loved to have been on that phone call when they're like, hey, Wolf, we got an idea. We're going to have someone in a hyper-realistic mask of your face. You want to be in Mission Impossible? Sure.
I love that scene. I thought that the scene later on when Simon Pegg, they do the little switch with the battery, with the bodies. Oh, that was pretty good, too. That scene became a little like convoluted with like everybody backstabbing each other. It was just like over the top. But I still thought that there was like those clever moments, those little twists, I thought were pretty good. And like as somebody who's just watched all these back to back, those moments still surprise me, you know? Like that's saying something.
Yeah, I do agree. I was surprised there. I think one thing that I didn't like was how quickly Henry Cavill like gave away that he was the bad guy. Like the second he hands the unbroken phone to his boss, it's like, oh, he's clearly John Lark. That's the name of the guy they're trying to discover. Like, it was so clear. And that was really early on.
That was one part of the story that I really did not like. So the interview with the director, he mentions how they specifically put that scene in because they felt like people would be really disappointed with Henry Cavill being the villain. If they found that later on, they would feel like lied to. I don't buy that at all.
No.
I feel like that would just be a better story. If you didn't find out till like 2/3 of the way through.
I want to be surprised. Like, it was so early.
That's how movies work.
And it was, that's the thing too. That's why I didn't like it. Cause it felt like so out of place. It was like, oh, here's just a scene where he hands her this unbroken phone, like cut in between two other kind of pivotal scenes. Like here's this one scene where he clearly gives himself away as a bad guy. And then it's like, a half hour later until that comes into play again.
At least, yeah.
It was very weird.
And the time in between those scenes, it makes for, like, very little tension.
Yeah.
Because you know what's coming.
Yeah.
You know exactly what's coming.
I didn't like it at all. One thing I did love with him that we touched on earlier, that bathroom fight scene was honestly, I think, one of the most well-choreographed,
It was amazing.
Funny, kind of funny, and, like, intense, and just every time, like, it was just so surprising, I felt like. Because there were so many surprises. There was, you know, somebody would flip, or just the choreography was nuts. And that was the one scene where I was actually blown away by the stunts and the choreography. I was totally taken aback by how much I love that scene.
What is absolutely just mind-blowing about that scene is that it's like the choreography isn't just incredible from a technical standpoint. Like, intricate action choreography is never believable. Like, yes. It's very clearly choreographed. And, yeah. Like, the moment... So you've got Tom Cruise and Henry Cavill. An action star and this just giant, like, guy that plays Superman.
The Hammer.
And they are two-on-one against this relatively small dude.
Yes.
Right? And you, of course, are thinking, oh, they've, like... He's not even a threat to them. And the way that fight unfolds...
Yep.
It is completely believable
yes.
that the guy is so good at fighting
yeah.
that he beats them.
So Henry Cavill kind of gets knocked out and Tom Cruise is like barely picking himself up. And the guy's like standing up and like kind of adjust his suit and is like still just like, let's fucking go. Let's do this. I'm still ready. I was like, that whole scene, like you're just so into it. I feel like my adrenaline was even going because it was like every turn there was a surprise, a new like rip the pipe out, thrown through a mirror, thrown through a wall. The bathroom stall where he wakes up and just, like, surprises. It was just so entertaining. And, like, Henry Cavill using the computer to bash him, knock him out first, and then they can't make their mask. Like, it was that. So going into that scene, I had thought, like, they're going to knock this guy out, make a mask, and then they're going to move on. And it was, like, that was a really long twist. Like, it took a while, but it was such an unexpected twist. Like, you don't expect them to get into obstacles that quickly. Like, usually in these movies, I feel like it's pretty easy going until the finale. Like, most things go according to plan. And that was one part that was kind of just surprising. One thing I took issue with, I know you love when I take issue with things.
I do.
So many things, just so close to falling off the edge of things. It's like, everything that's important almost falls off or is, like, almost killed. Whether it's a detonator, a helicopter that's somehow supported by a rock, and then another rock. Simon Pegg almost hanging himself. It was just like there's so many of those close. Like, you know, Tom Cruise is going to get there. You know, Simon Pegg is going to survive.
Those moments are like those are when these movies really kind of fall apart for me because I'm like I don't care because I am completely okay going into this film knowing that he's going to save the day.
Yes,
I don't wonder about the ending. I don't really care. And like those like. Those moments of you, like, they're like, oh, it's going to happen,
Well, that's when people were literally laughing in the theater. Like, the detonator rolls to the side of this mountain. They need to get to the detonator to deactivate the bombs. It, like, rolls an inch away from the side of a cliff, and people are just laughed. Because, like, 2 seconds before that, the helicopter's, like, rolled down a mountain, and somehow, like, one hook supports this whole helicopter, and people laughed at that point, too. And it's, like, back-to-back just ridiculousness. But it is. I think it's something you expect with these movies. I don't know.
Yeah.
A lot of this takes place in France.
Uh-huh.
And the whole time I just thought of like, I'm not one to stereotype, but I imagine the Frenchman with like a, you know, a cigarette and a beret having his morning coffee and baguette, like with Tom Cruise screaming down the streets, just being like, God damn it, Tom Cruise. God damn it, Tom Cruise.
So I don't really have much else to say about this movie. I think we should wrap it up.
Let's.
You can find all of our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Anchor.fm, pretty much wherever else you find your podcasts.
Stitcher, sure.
Stitcher, go for it.
Facebook. Feel free to follow us on Instagram. We're hanging out at Fast Food Film Friends. We have our new Twitter at FFFF Podcast. It's the Twitter handle. Fast Food Film Friends. Was taken. That's what took us so long. We had a long legal battle to try to get that name. Didn't work out. Judge ruled against us. But it's there if you want to get at us, as the young kids say. We're on Facebook at Fast Food Film Friends too. And while you're there, shoot us a note. Let us know, you know, if you tried the Meat Mountain, what foods you want us to try next, what movies we should see next.
Until next time.
Farewell.